Welcome to Smashing the Plateau. We help you get unstuck so you can do what you love and get paid what you're worth, consistently. I'm your host, David Schreiner Khan.
Leaders do a lousy job of saying no to things that aren't in alignment with what they should be doing.
Today on episode 463 of Smashing the Plateau, I'm here with CEO of Breakfast Leadership, Michael Levitt. I'm going to ask Michael how to learn boundaries in your work and life, and much more. Find out more about Michael, along with all of our previous episodes, at smashingtheplateau.com. Now let's welcome Michael Levitt. Michael is with Breakfast Leadership. He's a public speaker and published author of 369 Days, How to Survive a Year of Worst Case Scenarios That Brings People Back to Life, focused on helping individuals and leaders within corporations learn boundaries in their work and personal lives so that they can accomplish more by doing less, which will save their careers and possibly their lives. Michael, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Great to be with you today, David.
So, Michael, why did you write your book and what's behind the title 369 Days?
In 369 Days, back in 2009 and 2010, I had a heart attack that should have killed me. I lost my job during the economic recession. Our family vehicle was repossessed, and finally, the home was foreclosed, all in 369 days. It's definitely a year of worst case scenarios and definitely the worst year of my life as far as having all those catastrophic losses happen at once. And after 8 years of that passing, I felt that I needed to write about it to provide myself closure, but also to share with others my story, because many people were unaware of what had happened to me. And my close personal friends had some insights, but they didn't know everything. So it was an opportunity for me to share my story and how I was able to overcome all of those things in a way that I can joke about it today.
Wow. So, you know, I find it interesting, actually, that even close friends may not have known kind of the depth of what you were going through.
Well, they knew about the heart attack because I didn't keep that a secret. And of course, the job loss as well. The close friends definitely knew about it because they were all trying to help me find, you know, a role. But I was based in Windsor, Ontario, which is just across the border from Detroit, Michigan. As we all recall, back in the recession days, the governments, both Canada and the United States, had to bail out the automotive sector. And Detroit, of course, is the Motor City. So two of the three automakers were on their last leg. And of course, because that area is built that way, many, many jobs are driven from the auto sector. So when the auto sector was going down the tubes, you know, pretty much everything else was too. So there was no jobs to be found. Anybody that did have a job, they weren't going to be leaving it by any means. So it required me to look a lot further out than that general area to find work. And ultimately, I ended up finding something in Toronto, which was not an area that I really wanted to go to. But I've been here for over a decade now, and love it up here, other than, you know, the snowy weather you get in the winter sometimes.
So before I talk to you about what you actually did to recover from that, I wonder if you could talk about what mistakes you see people make when they're in the throes of the kind of downturn and despair and health issues that you were facing.
The biggest thing for me, the biggest mistake that I see a lot of people make that I did, was not taking care of yourself first. Many people that struggle with burnout and not taking care of their health are focused outward. They're focused on taking care of the needs of their organizations, their family, their friends, everybody else except themselves. And they end up running out of gas or being really stressed to the point where they start making mistakes, which is something that happened to me as well. So avoiding taking care of yourself first is a big one. And when you don't do that, the level of mistakes you make starts to increase, as well as clarity. Clarity tends to be clouded. So if you're an executive or a leader or a manager, you're going to miss out on things that normally you would see because you're too clouded with the challenges of not getting enough rest, not taking care of yourself, and completely stressing out.
So if you are in a situation like you were, where you didn't have enough income, how do you have the wherewithal to take care of yourself and find ways to relax, to get enough sleep. I would imagine that it's pretty stressful and hard to do those things.
Yeah, it was definitely a challenge for that, you know, period after the heart attack and, of course, the job loss, because my insurance had ran out. And, of course, when you're a new cardiac kid, you get to take all of these high-priced medications to keep you alive, which was close to $700 a month. You know, that's a car payment, and I mean a really nice car payment. I wasn't driving a nice car at that point, and ultimately the car we did have was going to be repossessed. But for me, you know, the focus on it was, and I knew that this was stressful, but I started taking a lot of classes through, you know, thankfully with a heart attack, you know, the hospital put me through a program that the Heart and Stroke Institute ran. So there was a lot of mental health courses and nutrition courses and things like that that I took while I was off of work. So I learned some techniques on how to relax. Now, obviously, it's difficult to relax when you've got more bills than money. And you also have this whole recovering from a pretty significant health scare. And you, so boggle all those things around in your brain a little bit. You know, the odds of someone coming out from that in one piece is definitely low. Now, thankfully, I did because I had a good support system. You know, my family was supportive. I had friends that were able to at least, you know, support me in a way, you know, without finances, because I refused to ask for money, which was probably a bullheaded on my part. But I did make sure that it's like, let's just learn from this. Let's figure out what we need to do next step. And I think that's ultimately what got me through all of those losses was, okay, that happened. I can't change what happened, but I can change what I do going forward.
Yeah. So now let's shift and talk about the kind of experiences and perhaps stresses that business leaders go through. And before they get to the point where they were facing the kind of really severe constraints that you found yourself in with health issues, with major economic challenges, what are the biggest mistakes that you see them make today?
Biggest mistakes are they don't have the right boundaries in what they do. I find a lot of people that burn out tend to be very successful individuals. They've risen through the ranks. They're C-suite executives, senior leaders, top managers, type A personalities, but not always, but very driven individuals that are going above and beyond and have done great things in their life and their career. And what happens is they get used to that. And it starts off slow. And what happens is if you're really good at something, people think you're also going to be really good at other things. So you start getting things handed to you, whether it's a promotion or taking over a new division that was struggling. Next thing you know, you're going from running maybe two or three divisions to six or seven or maybe even more. And what happens is you're trying to juggle all of those things at once. Leaders do a lousy job of saying no to things that aren't in alignment with what they should be doing. I was horrible at delegation. I find a lot of leaders are as well, where they don't spend enough time to really focus on what only they can do. And they take on too much, and it creates a perfect storm, an opportunity for burnout and high stress to happen.
Sounds like scope creep.
It is. Burnout is a lot like scope creep. You sign up for that project and you're like, okay, we're going to be working on this particular division. Next thing you know, you're on a plane to Japan. You're going, wait a minute, I thought we were just going to be working at the Biloxi office. And it happens a lot, but it creeps up on you for sure.
So particularly when these kinds of additional responsibilities creep up slowly, how do you notice them? And how do you figure out that they're happening?
If you have good self-awareness, you'll pick up on it. You'll notice that you're stressing out. You're starting to feel some physical ailments. Your sleep patterns aren't good. But if you're like many, including myself, the whole world knew I was burned out except me. And they tried to tell me. It wasn't a case where don't tell Michael that he's burned out. It was a case where everyone knew that I was going down a path and I was ignoring all of the signs and not taking a step back. But those are definitely some big things to look for is how's your sleep patterns, how's your home life? Yes, as executives and leaders of organizations and departments, there are seasons that, yeah, you may have to work more hours than you did before. But when it's constant and it's every day, week after week, month after month, year after year, that's an issue. And you need to address it and have, you know, a frank conversation with your bosses, and do it in such a way where you're saying, look, I want to be the best that I can be. However, with all of these things, I'm wondering what should be my top priority in order for me to be the best. Because if you go in and say you're dumping too much work on me, then they'll replace you with somebody else. They'll find somebody else to do it. So I understand why people are a little apprehensive as far as approaching their supervisors on their workloads. But at the end of the day, if you're only producing 60 or 70% of what you used to, and you're burning out, they're going to lose a great employee because you're not able to deliver what you used to be able to because, quite frankly, you just have too much on your plate.
Right. The other thing that I've noticed, Michael, is that people that recognize that they're overwhelmed, their immediate reaction is often, I would like to change everything that's overwhelmingly really quickly. Like, I've had it and I want to just stop. And in reality, what I'm hearing from you is the better course of action is not to just stop all at once, but to address things slowly and piecemeal to try to reduce the stress and the imbalance without wreaking havoc.
Yeah, both for the organization and yourself, and you know, just stopping everything. Now, of course, if you're hospitalized, then that the hospital does it for you. But hopefully you can avoid that. And if you have the opportunity to just take a brief pause, look at everything that you're doing and figure out ways how to make some tweaks to make things a little bit easier on you, still be able to accomplish the things you need to accomplish, but in such a way where it's not robbing you years of your life, you definitely should take advantage of that opportunity.
Mm. What's a good example of someone who may have experienced this kind of gradual increase in stress, gradual increase in responsibility, who has managed to really make a major transformation by doing it thoughtfully, strategically, and without too much haste?
Give you an example of someone that I personally know that went through some significant stress. Organization, she rose up through the ranks in this industry and then took on an executive role for an organization. And she, quite frankly, you know, went in there like the new sheriff and was going to put her footprint on the organization first and foremost, completely ignoring the culture, completely ignoring the history of the organization. She wanted to set the tone for how things were going to be. She didn't have any buy-in from anybody. She nearly lost her job, for one. She lost her board of directors' confidence for a bit. She definitely lost the confidence of her team. And it was a case when we talked, like, okay, this is salvageable, but we're going to have to go about this very methodically and very slow and a lot of open communication with your boss and with your team. And it turns out that she was able to turn things around through guidance and something that I learned afterwards, and you know, I have permission to share this. What I didn't know after she turned everything around and the staff loves her and she, you know, got a, you know, huge salary increase and board loves her and just complete turnaround and things flow better for her. But one thing I didn't know about at the time was her and her spouse had been trying to have children for several years. But because she was high impact, high stress, all of these things, you know, nature does its thing and stress can prevent people from, you know, becoming, you know, pregnant and having children. Well, after all of this and after she relaxed and after everything calmed down, then her and her husband found out that they were expecting. So they'd been trying for years and failed. They couldn't, things just wouldn't work. So it was, again, an example of, you know, not this is not for everybody, you know, relax, you know, relief of your stress and you might get pregnant. You know, I don't think that's on the list for many people, but it is one of those positive side effects. You know, if you're trying to start a family and you are in a high stress type of situation, you may have a rough go of it.
That's a great, great example. And I think it really illustrates the problem and a good outcome when you finally address it and create a good solution.
Absolutely. And it's a personal side of things. You know, it's separate from the place of employment, you know, from a personal family situation. You know, they wanted to have children. They were unable to for a period of time because of the stress and the burnout and the approach of how they were going about running their lives and their business.
If you like what you're hearing on today's episode, you may want to learn more about how you too can do what you love and get paid what you're worth consistently. Go to smashingtheplateau.com and click on Schedule Time with David. I look forward to speaking with you.
So, Michael, in your work with Breakfast Leadership, whom do you serve most? What kinds of people?
I tend to work with high-level executive C-suite, senior management. Tends to be where I focus because that's, you know, the role that I find myself in. So I know the language. My original career was public accounting, so I did auditing. So I'm familiar with pretty much every industry known to the human race. So I understand, with of course limits, of course, the environments that they face and the challenges that they face in their roles. So I can speak the language that they speak and guide them to make some tweaks. I don't like saying changes too much because sometimes that C word tends to get people flared up a little bit. So I say tweaks. You know, let's maybe modify this a little and try it from this angle. And when you do that, it tends to get more buy-in for them and they start getting those quick wins. And as anybody knows that's in the coaching world, as coaches, we're not the ones doing the work. It's our clients. They're the ones that have to take the reins and do the things that they need to do.
Right. So whatever language we can use that will help them make those kinds of tweaks or changes more effectively, the better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It makes a big difference. And then again, they get the buy-in and they understand I have the power to make these modifications. And then the next ones that may or may not be more challenging for them, they have the confidence that they've been able to implement some tweaks in their world and it just makes it easier.
So Michael, when you were experiencing the 369 days that you described earlier, how did you go from that to figuring out that you could be an effective role model doing what you're doing now, coaching and guiding others?
It came to me once I healed from everything and rebuilt my life and realized and took the opportunity to do it, because we all have that opportunity to rebuild our lives if we need to. And unfortunately, many don't. You know, many heart attack victims, only maybe 10% will actually implement any of the changes that their medical professionals tell them to do. I was eating it up like the best novel you could ever read. I'm like, what do I need to do? Because I don't want that to happen to me again. And made all the significant changes, had the weight loss. I'm off all of the medications other than a couple things that I take. Baby aspirin's one of them. So I'm off of that. So, you know, an additional few hundred dollars in the pocket doesn't hurt. And also too, what dawned on me was after I had rebuilt my life and things were successful and I was doing some great things in the healthcare space and elsewhere, I just became more observant of people. And I started seeing a lot of people going down the same path that I did. And it scared me. I'm like, okay, I need to talk with people about this and warn them about what they're doing. And oftentimes, you know, much like, you know, the sky is falling or anything else, sometimes people won't hear you. So I thought, okay, I need to do more research on this. So I just started researching burnout and stress and the causes. And there's plenty of material out there. But what I'm not finding as much is, okay, what caused this in the first place? You know, what led up to this? Because again, it's not an overnight thing. It builds over time. And you know, why are some people more prone to burnout and high stress than others? And it often boils down to their childhood, their decisions, why they do, if they're a people pleaser, which, you know, I was, you know, putting people first, that definitely created some havoc in my life. So I look for those types of traits. And when I see those, then it's like, okay, well, this is what we need to do. Why do you think you do it that way? And get them to start thinking about it and peeling back the layers a little bit to the point where they start recognizing, okay, I see what led up to this. Let's see what we can modify to prevent it from happening again. Because burnout can happen again if you don't address it properly.
Oh, absolutely. And looking back over what you've done since you faced that severe burnout, what has been most helpful to you in just building your business, particularly building one that's successful, profitable, and generates the kind of consistent revenue that you need?
For me, is, you know, one is just understand who my audience was. And I fumbled around with that for a bit and really tried to figure out, okay, who should I be talking to? And when you work in an industry, I worked in healthcare for, you know, over a decade, you know, I knew those people. I knew the reasons why stress and burnout could exist. And I knew, because again, I worked in that field, how to avoid it. I, you know, it was like I had my own internal GPS. So, okay, avoid this pitfall. Okay, this road's closed. Go over here, do this, and still accomplish everything I need to do, and then some. So, you know, that's a big factor in that. And understanding, again, who your client base is one, and be consistent at something. You know, there's no shortage of things that we can do as entrepreneurs. There's all kinds of things we can do. Writing a book was a big thing for me. That may not be a priority for you. If it's not, then don't. Because someone may say, we should write a book about this. But if you don't feel comfortable in writing a book or don't want to, then why spend the energy on that? Spend the energy where you feel driven to do something and you know that you can monetize it in the quickest way you can. There's going to be some things that are going to take some time to monetize, and there's going to be other things that could be easily modified or easily able to monetize. Those are the things you want to do, especially in the early days. This is not one of those things where you can be the martyr or entrepreneur, because you can't, you know, you feed your kid, you know, someone liking a post that you did on Facebook. You know, you have to be able to generate revenue. That's kind of how this works. So figure out what you can do as quickly as you can to start monetizing, and then take those revenues and continue to go down the path of what you want to do. And real quick too, map it out. Now, that doesn't mean you're not going to change that map, but at least map it out on paper and look at it. Because if it's bouncing around in your head, unless you're absolutely brilliant, and then things are going to be discombobulated and you're not going to be able to connect the dots properly until you put it out on paper and you look at it and go, wait a minute, I can't get to that if I skip this step. So it makes a big difference when you put it to paper.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. Michael, whom do you know personally who has been really successful at smashing plateaus?
He's a healthcare guy. His name's Scott Becker. He runs Becker's Healthcare. It's based out of Chicago. His organization over the years has just broken through plateau after plateau in the healthcare space, as far as being, you know, one of the go-to industries in the, originally they, you know, printed a, you know, newspaper. Okay, for millennials, this was a piece of paper that you'd get every morning delivered to your house, or there was a box that had it. It had, you know, a local town had some news, sports, weather, things like that. Well, now they've migrated from that, and they've also done a lot of online space, and they have multiple conferences that sell out every year, and they bring in top-notch people, you know, guys from Shark Tank, former U.S. presidents, you name it. They bring in some really, really heavy hitters to do keynotes at their events. And I've seen Scott over the years just continue to grow and grow. And he just recently launched a podcast himself. So he understands this space and what it's doing. So he's constantly looking for areas of growth and, you know, busting through to the next level. So, you know, he's somebody that I personally know that I've seen over the years just continue to blast through those plateaus.
Wow, great example. And what can we look forward to, Michael, in the near future from you? What's coming up?
Near future, I launched another organization with a colleague of mine, and we're doing consulting in the HR space. I figure if healthcare is not crazy enough, let's go into HR too. We launched a book, and we're going on the HR conference circuit pretty soon, actually. And we'll be at various HR conferences throughout the year and working with organizations to help them find those Trojan horses in their organizations that have their employees just wanting to leave en masse. And that's a big problem. We're seeing a ton of people hating their jobs, and that's not a good thing.
Yep, sounds great. And if somebody wants to go deeper with what you shared today or learn more about what you're up to, where would they go?
Best place to find me is breakfastleadership.com. If you scroll to the bottom of the homepage, you'll see a bunch of icons of all the social media channels that I'm at. So you can find me there as well. But breakfastleadership.com is the best place to find me.
Sounds great. And do you have a free gift you'd like to share with our audience?
Absolutely. If they go to breakfastleadership.com/morning, they can get a free ebook on successful mornings. One of the things that I implemented after my year of worst case scenarios was being consistent in how I live my life. And I am a big fan of starting off mornings the right way. Kind of hence where the breakfast and breakfast leadership name came from is, get that, first meal in the right way and start your day off each day the right way. And it makes a big difference. So breakfastleadership.com/morning.
Sounds great. Michael, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau and share your experiences and your insights. My guest today has been Michael Levitt, the CEO of Breakfast Leadership. Thank you again, Michael, for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
When you visit the Smashing the Plateau website at smashingtheplateau.com, you'll find a summary of each episode along with the links we mention on the show. Today, we discussed how to learn boundaries and how Michael rebuilt his work and life. Would you like more consistent, stable revenue in your business? Go to smashingtheplateau.com and click on Schedule Time with David to connect directly with me. Please share this episode with friends and colleagues to help them smash the plateau. Thank you for taking time to listen to our show. I'll see you on our next episode.